Welcome, I'm Ryan Hicks, and this is Modern Business, the podcast to learn from franchise business leaders and explore new business technology. Our community is about sharing knowledge and tools that help us achieve our goals in business and beyond. Thanks for being here, and welcome to Modern Business. This is a special edition of Modern Business Podcast here on the franchisors.com summer tour. We're on day number 26. The time has flown by. 26 is a lot of days on the road. Yesterday we had the opportunity to sit with Robert Crisanti at the IFA. And as we spoke, we talked a lot about some of the staggering numbers and the data behind franchising. And that's very timely because today we're here in Arlington, Virginia, and we're at the offices of Fran Data. I'd like to give a warm introduction to Mr. Daryl Johnson, who's the CEO of Fran Data, as well as Edith Wiseman. She's the president of Fran Data. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
First and foremost, what's the town? What's the technical town that we're in? I know Arlington's a big place, but what town is this?
So this is considered Ballston.
Ballston,
B-A-L-L-S-T-O-N. And it's incredibly thriving. It's a place that's changed so much. I mean, I think Daryl can speak to this a little bit more because he's been here a little longer than I have in this area. But when we first moved here, what, like 10 years ago, this place was dead. And now you have unbelievable numbers of new businesses and restaurants coming into town. It's just a thriving area. And then with Amazon coming into Crystal City, the whole DC metro area is exploding.
Nice.
Well, for the record, I've been everywhere a little longer than Edith has.
Fair enough.
But this area really was a growth area as a function of the metro system that was put back probably in the late 70s. And for about the first 20 years, this was sort of the outlier of the metro system, and now it's just one stop of many all the way out to Dulles. And what's happened over time is the communities that did exist were more or less taken down, and a lot more mixed use came in around this.
So you guys were the visionaries, other than the metro systems. You were out here 10 years ago. That's nice. It's a booming area.
If we bought a house here, a Rambler, what, like 15 years ago, it would have been worth $200,000. Now you can sell it for $1 million, $1.5 million. So that's how much this place has changed.
Daryl's smiling like he bought some houses.
That's another way of saying we've lived through a lot of construction. Yes. What it really comes down to.
Yeah. Well, listen, there's some folks in the audience. Most of them will know you guys. Maybe there are some folks in the audience as it's expanded that have not had the pleasure of meeting you in person. Probably have seen you speak on a panel at different conferences, but would love to start with having you give a quick background on yourself and how you got into franchising and all the rest.
Sure. I guess I'll go first.
I should lead that. We'll start with Daryl.
Sure.
Well, I came into franchising in another century. Back in the 1990s, I was in the banking industry, and I had started several small business lending groups, and we started to use have a focus on franchising and started to use Fran Data's document and data services at the time. And we got pretty familiar both with the company and the owner of the company. In the late 1990s, the company made a move towards the dot-com era portal building, and it didn't work. And essentially, opportunity came knocking. I saw what was originally built around Fran Data, which was a document and data company, and saw the opportunity to build it into a research, market research company and advisory company. And mm-hmm. that was the start of what has now become a rather well-positioned and well-known market research company, the largest in the world that focuses on the franchise business model.
Excellent. What about you, Edith? A little about your background and your foray into franchising.
So I stumbled into franchising because I graduated from college, and like a lot of college grads, had no idea what they wanted to do with their lives. So I was looking for a job in international business, politics, and at the time, those jobs were paying roughly around $18,000, which is, you know, these days the word livable wage is thrown around quite liberally, but I couldn't actually afford to live on my with that type of salary. So I started looking outside of that, and research is something you know how to do when you graduate from college. So they offered me, Frandata offered me a position, and my very first project when I joined Frandata was working on the IFA's profile of franchising, which at the time was this massive undertaking. I chuckle because to do that now, it's like a third of the time.
Yes.
But then it was wild. So I started in research, and then I moved over to content editing, and then moved into client solutions. And so I think the more interesting part of my experience in franchising is why I've stayed in it for so long. So I've been with Frandata now 20 years, which in our generation is nearly unheard of. But it's because the franchising is so fascinating. It crosses 230 subsectors, every type of business format. And the types of people that I get into franchising are these incredible entrepreneurs. They have great ideas, and they're willing to go out on the edge, both franchisees and franchisors, to really see what business can do.
Excellent. Yeah, and I've heard so many people misquote the actual numbers, and you guys have the actual numbers, so it's fun to hear that. I just learned something, actually. But the world is changing vastly, and Frandata has been in the business for more than 30 years now. I'd like to learn about what changes that you guys have seen over the last three decades in the business.
Franchising has gone through a very dramatic change, and you can kind of consider it in the context of a consistent model that was applied for primarily focus on growth, find new prospects, expand systems, and that was true up until the early 2000s. You can more or less associated with the financial crisis that took place in 2007, but it wasn't really driven by it. The fundamental things that were already changing the nature of franchising and as it is today were really around capital flows, around information, and around technology. And if you mixed those three, what happened is everything started to accelerate more, and everything became more visible. The outcome of all of that, and since that period where those three things converged, has been a dramatic increase in the number of franchise brands. So from a competitive standpoint, there are a lot more competitors inside and outside of franchising that have really gone after segments. There's also a tremendous increase in transparency, and that transparency has played out both for prospects looking at brands, and to your point of there's a lot of information out there. Some of it is reliable and some of it isn't. And a lot of our work is to distinguish the two. And that transparency has led to a lot of performance comparisons for prospects looking at brands, has led to a lot more transparency in how brands are performing, and a lot more ratings. We're a rating agency for capital access today. And back to one of the big trends, capital flowing into franchising at a rapidly increased pace and a lot more distinguishing and judgmental pace. And that has led us to follow that and say, let's objectively evaluate how brands are performing. The same thing holds true on transparency generally. Franchisors looking at one another want to understand not just who their direct competitors are, but what's the best way to do something? And that has led to, with the increase in information, the application of technology, far more ability to look at those things.
Yeah, you said something that Robert Crisanti mentioned yesterday as we spoke with him, and that is that separating facts from data, facts from opinions and emotions, it's critical, and you guys have played an absolutely paramount role in that. Edith, a question for you. Having consistently studied the performance and growth of more than 3,800 franchise brands, what do you think franchisors should fear the most?
So it's a good question. I think there are a lot of franchise executives that have been in franchising for a long time, and they base their business decisions on experience. And every single business owner is operating their business with a set of assumptions. And in today's world, the rate of change is happening so fast. There are some industries where a competitor didn't exist.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, it is now on your radar. And so it's no longer really, it's a business challenge if franchisors don't validate their business assumptions and pay attention to those competitors that they don't think are really competitors.
Yeah.
Because the world just is, it is specifically in franchising, is changing so rapidly.
What would you say, and this is a question for both of you, what would you say some of the most interesting questions that franchisors want you to answer? Because I can imagine they're on all different sides of the business, there's a plethora, whether it's consumer or whether it's competitors and all the rest. But Daryl, I'll start with you first. What interesting questions franchisors are asking?
That's a good question. I would characterize the questions that they ask in two groupings. One is around how franchisors can do things better. And the second is, what should we do next? With regard to the first one, the types of questions that evolve, and I'll give you an example. A franchisor acquires another franchisor. Now they have two brands. One of them has a call center. The other one is looking at whether to build a call center. So the question that was posed to us is, what's the best way to put a call center together when we've got two sets of brands and we're trying to deal both with recruitment and with customers? How do we do that? So the question that arises there is one that fundamentally is, how do we do things better? And we get those kinds of inquiries regularly from franchisors that are knowing they're all executing the same business model, but aspects of it have changed. Who's doing, how do we do this better than we're currently doing it? In the second category, it's really around, what do we do next? In the U.S., a lot of brands have considered that they've grown to a certain point. Maybe they have hit their capacity in the U.S. They have two options. Do we change a model and build a second offering?
Mm.
Or do we go international? And those are strategic questions that we, as a market research company, are well positioned to answer as it relates to the business model.
Edith, anything you'd like to add to that?
So I first want to say there is no uninteresting question. but there are two examples come to mind. So we had a franchisor who's a rather large franchisor who acquired a small brand that was not franchising. And what was interesting about their question is that they wanted to know, before they started franchising this brand, they wanted to know what the continuum of performance was against a key set of metrics. So they wanted to know if we looked at franchising across the board in their particular industry and then also across all franchising, what did poor performance look like, what did good performance, and what did best performance look like? And what I thought was really great about this particular question is that they had two objectives. The first one was to first be able to constantly measure, as they started franchising, where were they along that continuum. And then secondly, they want to be the best. Mm-hmm. So they said, we want to know and be able to announce to the whole world when we've achieved best. So I was like, that's incredible clarity of thought from day one of franchising. And they, of course, had an advantage because they were already a franchisor, so they knew what, yeah, how not to do it or what other things to build on. The second example is that in today's environment, franchise development is incredibly competitive, and every single qualified prospect or lead, franchise development lead, is gold. And it is really difficult for a franchise executive or for management to look and see these qualified prospects leaving the pipeline. So the question that was posed to us is, how do we objectively find out why these prospects are falling out of the pipeline. So that if you can imagine, if you know why, you have one franchise sale that results because of maybe tweaking the way you present information, the sales process flow, what kind of incredible results. Like it pays to study that. So those would be my two most interesting questions right now.
Yeah, I have to say to the audience that there are a lot of folks out there that would like to know that information that might not have it today, and that's very, very powerful. So one of the things that people often refer Fran data as or equate it to is basically the Forrester or the Gartner of franchising. Why is that?
Well, it's flattering to be compared to those two companies because they are really good market research companies. Why people, I think, consider us in that same genre is we are the largest market research company in the world that focuses entirely on the franchise business model, and therein lies our distinct advantage over advisory firms, consulting firms generally. We have the largest base of information and the largest base of knowledge about how the franchise business model works and how every brand in franchising started, how they grew, and where they evolved. Consequently, from a market research standpoint, we're really good at answering key questions around market, validating strategic assumptions, dealing with all strategic decisions that franchisors make.
Two follow-up questions. One, have you seen, and not naming any names, but have you seen other market research companies that may be in the top tier that have wrong data? And secondly, why is it important to work with a franchise-specific group to get your data?
Ryan, you just like plucked all of everything I ever thought. So we get calls all the time from large consulting firms, because they don't specialize in franchising, right? They might have a consumer market focus or retail or what have you, manufacturing. But because they're a big name, companies go to them for expertise. And every single time we get off the phone with these companies, they're very smart people. We just knock our heads against the wall because we say they don't actually understand franchising in a way that is positioning them to ask the right questions, mm-hmm. right? So part of what when we talk to franchisors or anybody who's engaged in franchising, we're almost like a little therapist because we know already kind of what problems they're going to encounter. So yeah, being able to interpret the data in the right way is one thing, but then also knowing how to approach the problem is something else. So yes, to your question.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that you're almost coaching, especially if it's on the emerging side, but really all sides, because you know what matters to them and you know what's important. Is there anything, Daryl, that you wanted to add to that of why it's important to work with a franchise-specific data source?
Well, I think the key that most C-suite executives in franchising base their decisions on is their own experience. And their own experience, almost by definition, has biases built into it. Therefore, when they're looking at information, when they're looking at a question, they're often looking at it through a filter. Mm-hmm. And our goal and our role oftentimes is to remove that filter, to look at what's really happening and understand the implications of that.
Yeah. Next question, how would you characterize, and I'll ask this for both of you, how would you characterize the work that you do for franchisors? Because we were just talking about almost like you're consulting with people, but how would you characterize that?
So you're looking at me, so I guess I'll go.
Yeah, we'll start with you.
So broadly speaking, we're a market research firm, but we also do best practices, advisory, benchmarking, and recruitment advisory. So that can take many forms, but I'll give one mm-hmm. example. So we were working every single year with a brand in early childhood education who would get a benchmark of where they perform against their competition. And for him, it gave him this direction to be able to get new ideas, things that he hadn't thought about, and also validate their plan for the next year. So he moved over to another franchise, and he realized that there weren't any franchise competitors. And he was really at a loss because he was like, I've relied on that. That was my like Bible every year. Mm-hmm. And now he needed to find a new strategy. So that's one way in which we work with clients.
Daryl, would you add anything to that?
I might expand on it because I think this is a key to understanding how a market research company with the capabilities that we have can actually serve franchisors better. So let me put it in my words. As Ita said, there are really four capabilities: market research, best practices, benchmarking, and recruitment advisory. But let me back up on those, and I think by example it may be a little more clear. With market research, it really typically comes down to two things. As a franchisor that's in a segment and that market share may not be moving very much, but there's a lot of more entrants coming into the market and there are a lot of things happening outside that existing market, the question is, what's coming around the corner? What should we be preparing for over the next 2 or 3 years that we don't even see because we are seeing our business through our own filtering eyes? On the best practices side, the key to any of the best practices that we do, from my perspective, what's interesting about the franchise business model is that there are 3,800 versions of how to execute it, and they're all trying to do the same thing, execute the franchise business model. They all have the same functional responsibilities, and they all have the same desire to have outcomes. So we start in best practices typically when somebody says, we're trying to figure out how to do something better. We start with, let's find brands that have really good outcomes around this, yeah. And then let's back up and figure out how did they do it. One of the advantages that we have is that we can take any franchise brand today and say, I can tell you what they were doing 10 years ago. I can tell you how they were doing things five years ago.
So you can retro pull the data?
So we can back everything up and say, let's reconstruct how they got to where they are today on any topic. And that's one of the tremendous advantages of a market research company like ours in terms simply of best practices. If we look at benchmarking, oftentimes when we talk to a franchisor and they want to benchmark themselves, they start with their competitors. We start with, what are we trying to measure? For instance, with recruitment, they say, well, let's see what our other competitors are getting in the way of franchisees, and let's mirror that. Our typical response to that example, for instance, is you're not competing against the competitors that offer the same products and services. You're competing about every option that prospect is considering. So let's start there. What are the options they're considering? And then figure out what the right profile is that you should be targeting. Those are the types of things, whether it's recruitment, whether it's benchmarking, is to look at what the outcomes are and then back it up. And that's the distinct advantage that we have.
And I hear over and over and over, recruitment is the biggest deal. And so if you don't know, if you start with the outcomes, I think that's very wise. Let's shift gears and talk about some of your client base and what that looks like. Who are some of the best clients, and what does that look like for you?
So I would characterize our best clients as those that are constantly trying to improve. So they don't just get tunnel vision and we just do. They step back and say, what's an area of our business that we know is a little bit of a challenge, and let's figure out how to fix that. Our best clients, they consider us their secret sauce, meaning that we give them their competitive advantage, and they don't want people to know that they work with us. Basically, we're signing NDAs almost every single week. So that's how I would characterize our best clients.
Anything that you want to add?
I would describe our best clients and not in terms of what they're trying to do, but in terms of how they view us. Our best clients view us as a research department in their operation. Mm-hmm. When they encounter a key assumption that they're making and saying, this is what we think we're going to base some decision on, they pick up the phone and call us and say, what do you think of this? What can you add to it? What do you know about this? When they are trying to make an important strategic decision or even tactical decision, when they're setting their goal for next year and how many new franchised units they should have and they should expect, they're doing that in the context of a world that's changing rapidly around them. They're also doing it in the context of every other franchise brand doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So for their annual planning, they're making some key assumptions and critical decisions, and they're doing it in the absence of having additional input and objective perspective, unless they're one of our clients, in which case they pick up the phone and say, here are two or three things that we're trying to make sure that we have right. Can you help us validate it? That's how our best clients use us.
I think that's powerful in a world where we have 3,800 franchisors, and I might be wrong on this statistic, but around 15,000 licenses awarded a year, whatever the number is. There's a lot of people going after a relatively small pool of local operators, so that's very powerful. The other thing that I'd like to ask, how do you think market research can change the trajectory of a brand, whether it's emerging and they leverage your tools from the beginning, or whether they're more mature or regional, whatever it is, how can it change the trajectory? And what is the effect that you've seen your research have on some of the brands that you've worked with?
So one of the hardest jobs that franchisors have is to influence their franchisees, right? So as an employer, you can tell your employees what to do, right? Or they can choose to leave or what have you. But franchisors have to convince these small business owners to adopt an idea. Mm-hmm. And that there's often conflict and tension around that, because it might mean investing dollars or changing something that a franchisee thinks is being successful or for them. And so what's really powerful is bringing data and information to that conversation. And so on the positive side, what market research has done for franchisors is to bring franchisees and franchisors together on a decision. And sometimes that decision is the franchisor is absolutely right and all of the data supports what they're trying to do with the franchise system, and franchisees can get on board. I've been a part of conversations with franchise advisory councils where the eyeballs of franchisees are opening up and they're like, wow, I did not know that. On the other side, it also can help franchisors say, oh, really great idea, but the data actually doesn't support it. On the negative side, so research doesn't always say good things.
Yeah, or validate what you're looking for.
Exactly. On the negative side, I would say this is more related to franchisors who are selling their business. When we've been hired by private equity firms, and the due diligence research that we've done on their behalf has led to either a reduced valuation or a PE firm deciding not to buy. So research has lots of different outcomes and can change the trajectory of a brand.
But it's important to be able to be in front of that. I thought of multiple examples from just my dealings with franchise brands and working with advisory councils and being able to bring a different level of data. That's just so powerful. Is there anything that you would like to add to that on the trajectory and how you've seen it affect some clients that you work with?
Just a brand reputation comment. Frandata has built its entire business around objectivity. And where objectivity comes into play in this particular discussion, as it relates to franchisees, is our reputation of saying we're not telling you what we think the world is doing, we're telling you what the world is. And that difference is what allows a franchisor, if they're dealing with change with the franchisee system that they're trying to move to a different point, brings objective perspective that is a validation of what is really happening from the outside, not from somebody trying to influence behavior inside. Mm-hmm. And the same thing holds true overall. And we've built that reputation. We stick our chin out on that reputation. The Forbes best and worst list. It's not just identifying the best under a set of criteria, but also those that are really not getting it right. And that type of reputation plays well to this type of topic of how do you change it, the trajectory of a franchise system? Well, you get correct perspective. You reduce the biases of what you think is happening and understand what really is happening. And that helps influence behavior.
I'll add one more thing to that. So earlier you asked Daryl what's changed over the past decades. And the one thing that came to my mind was international franchising. Mm-hmm. Before it was always characterized as the wild, wild west. And so franchisors would sell these huge master development agreements and they would never get fulfilled. And slowly over time, franchisors have recognized like the cost of that. So like up front, you get this great big check and that's amazing. But then when they have to pull out of a market or they realize that their brand has been damaged in that market because they had absolutely no communication with the franchisee in a certain country. So the trajectory, market research has been changing the trajectory of brands internationally because they recognize if we do a little study ahead of time in a specific country, mm-hmm. then we know, are we actually going to be successful there? So let's not go into a market that is literally not aligned with what our brand needs to be successful. And they reduce the reputation cost, the brand devaluation, and all sorts of other negative consequences of not knowing upfront and not paying attention to what's going to make their brand successful in each market.
Very powerful, as a lot of brands have been very successful here in the States and turned their eyes internationally, and there's a lot of emerging markets and really excellent potentials, and also discovering which markets that they should be looking at. So very, very powerful. What I'd like to do as we move to close is have both of you give some advice to emerging brands and also give some advice to mature brands, just in general, maybe like a little mini graduation pep talk or whatever, but starting with you, Daryl.
With emerging brands, my advice is that they are starting to build a business in using a business model that thousands of franchisors are using and have used. There isn't a single issue that an emerging brand will encounter that other franchisors haven't addressed. Some of them have addressed it well, some of it have addressed it poorly, but they all have had to address it. Therefore, my advice to emerging brands is learn what everyone else has done well and not well, and shortcut your learning curve as you go out and build your business.
Excellent, excellent advice. Anything that you would add?
Sure. So in studying thousands of emerging brands, we've seen a couple common threads mm-hmm. of what emerging brands' challenges are. And most emerging brands don't actually know who their prospect profile is. Right. So who is going to be a successful franchisee in their business? They also have unrealistic expectations of growth. Right. So the most common thing we hear is we're going to be 1,000 units in 5 years. And so as an emerging brand, they've already invested in becoming a franchisor. And the worst thing that could happen is that investment doesn't get realized from a return standpoint. So it pays to try and figure out the most important things. What is realistic growth? And who is the right type of franchisee for their system? And a few of these key questions can really change the success rate of any given franchise system. So that would be my advice to emerging brands.
Excellent advice. What about mature brands? What say you to mature brands? Advice-wise.
Mature brands have figured it all out. They know exactly how to execute the business model. They've learned how to build a system, how to manage a system, how to grow a system. They've got it all figured out. Here's what they miss. Typically, because they have done things their way for a very long time. They don't see around the corner, and they don't see what's happening even in their own industry or their own sector. Most sectors today are not growing faster than the economy overall. And yet their growth plans year over year are 5%, 6%, 8% growth. That isn't going to work unless they learn their business over again. And one of the ways to learn their business over again is to go through the entire life cycle and go back to the beginning. There are lots of new brands coming in every year. We pick up over 350 new franchise brands entering the market. They're not entering the market with a completely different approach to anything. They're taking nuanced slices out of an existing market share, but some of them are doing it really well. Mm-hmm. Mature brands, who is doing it really well, and what are they doing differently that are eventually going to cut right into your business?
Excellent. Excellent, excellent. I can think of 1,000 examples as you're speaking. Edith, is there anything that you'd add to that on the mature brand side?
So I would say that there's a lot of money that's been coming into franchising in lots of different ways, whether it's international companies buying franchisors, private equity firms, strategic buyers. And so there's this ability for a brand to grow very quickly. And mature brands usually look at their top five competitors. Oh, who are our biggest, you know, who we should be, who we're constantly always looking at. But if you look at a brand like Orange Theory Fitness, who grew to 1,000 units in 7 years, that is fantastic growth. Their competitor in that space, not direct, but certainly an iconic brand, Gold's Gym, took almost 3 times that to get to half the number of units. So we're living in a different environment. So I think it's really important for mature brands to look at the entire space as competitors and to be nimble and act like an emerging brand in the way they approach the market.
Very well said. As we move to close, where do folks go to learn more about you first? So where do folks go to learn more about you?
Frandata.com would be the first place. Obviously, the Modern Business Podcast.
Okay, yeah. My other question, as it relates to pricing, we probably don't want to get into the nitty-gritty and the details because it depends on the scope. But what is a typical engagement look like? A one-time per data query? Is it an annual subscription? What does that look like?
It really depends. Because we have clients who are retainers with us who want to be able to, who have structured questions that they want to ask of us regularly. And we have clients who get a research engagement with us every single year, so they make sure that they're ready for their annual planning. And then we have very topic-specific best practices research. So we're trying to improve this area of our business. And it might be a 6-month, you know, research project, which leads to a recommendation for improvement. So those would be the 3 ways that franchisors work with us.
Excellent. Well, Daryl Johnson, Edith Wiseman, really appreciate your time today. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.